All right. I would like to call to order this regular CROG Policy Board meeting. The date is Wednesday, November 17th. The time is 12:04 p.m. Will you please call or take the roll? I don't know. Do you call that or do you just take it?
We just take it off the participation list.
So then we'll move right along to the public comment section. Seeing and hearing none. One time, two times, three times. We'll move along to item number three, approval of the minutes. Are there any questions or comments regarding the minutes from the October 27th meeting?
Mayor, I believe we have to skip this item.
Until we get skipping a
quorum. Yep. We are going to skip that. We'll go right on to number four on the items, correspondence and handouts. Pauline, for three grant funding opportunities.
So you have in your packet a memo regarding a couple of grant funding opportunities for towns, the Urban Forestry Climate Change Grants, America the Beautiful Grant Program, and DEEP's non-point source 319 grants. So that's just informational for the members, that it's an opportunity that you could take advantage of if you so wish.
Fantastic. Thank you. Are there any questions or comments on that? Okay, we'll move along to item B, economic impact of the Hartford-Springfield-Boston rail service. Lyle, it's all you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. CROG has been working on advocacy for the Hartford-Springfield-Boston rail line. We commissioned a study of economic impact that shows that the cost would be $6 to $8 billion and the benefit would be $60 to $80 billion over 30 years. So it's massive. We also commissioned a study on ridership on the line. We have results that show that the estimate could be as much as 50% higher than was offered in a study by the DOT next door. And so we're continuing on that. One of the next projects is probably looking at the cost estimates for the project. But if you are interested, this Thursday at noon, we have a panel. Jim Redeker, the previous DOT commissioner, is going to be moderating it. We have remarks from John Morrison. We have the AECOM team, Steve Gazzillo and his colleagues, who did the economic impact study. Dan Hodge did the ridership estimate analysis. And then we have, as panelists, Mayor Luke Bronin and my peer in Pioneer Valley, Kim Robinson. So it's just an update. Welcome to join our hour and a half webinar this Thursday at noon. So if there's any questions, I'd be happy to respond. And there, I got a question in the box here. Yes, there will be a link for the recording of that event, and we may want to simply include it in minutes to everybody so that they can get it. But we do record those webinars. So yes, there's a recording we can make available for you.
Great. Thank you, Lyle. Any questions? All right. Thanks so much, Pauline. You want to talk about the Public Service Executive Leadership Collaborative?
Yes, this is a partnership with UConn MPA program where they offer workshops to our members. And there's we just published the this season's worth of workshops. And I think these are really good opportunities for people to be able to have developmental opportunities. And I would highly encourage members to pass it on or to participate.
And especially to participate on Friday, December 10th, because look at that fabulous panelist that you have about leadership, launching and sustaining a performance management system.
It's a familiar face.
Thank you. Yep, it'll be fun. Great. That will be in person and live.
Fantastic. Any questions or comments? All right. Pauline, Policy Board meeting schedule.
Yes, so you have in your packet also a draft schedule of the board schedule for next year. Please review it and see if we've missed anything. We try to avoid major holidays and ICMA conferences and things like that, but sometimes we can miss that. And so this will come before the board for approval in December.
Great, thank you. I see we had some other folks join us. Does this
count? We do have a quorum now.
Boom. Let's move back to, can I move back to approval of the minutes? Do I have a second?
Second, Chris Kervick.
I don't know who said that, but Laura, I'm just going to trust you got it. Any questions, comments, changes? Seeing, hearing none. All those approval, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. We're going to go into monthly reports. And Pauline, I'll throw it back to you.
So you have the monthly report. Excuse me. And if members have any questions regarding the executive director report and actually any of the departments, feel free to ask any questions on what's before you. And I do believe Metro Hartford is on the line as well. So if there's any questions on any of the topics, feel free.
Hi, I'm sorry, I was late to respond. This is Becky Nolan with Metro Hartford Alliance. Thank you so much. Just wanted to give you a brief update. The Alliance and Advanced CT have been working very collaboratively on many projects that I hope you're seeing come to your communities. Right now, the Alliance internally has about 55 active projects, as well as Advanced CT. They have another 100. So collectively, we are working about 150 projects together. So exciting that Connecticut is certainly getting a new look from consultants due to the fact I think the legislative changes for data centers has opened up a lot of opportunities. So with that, the Alliance continues to support your communities, bringing more visibility. And I thank you all for everything that you're doing locally that gives us the opportunity to certainly work closely with the state and bring more development here. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Becky. All right, any questions or comments on all of the reports? Oh boy, Capital Workforce, I don't believe is here. So we have John for the Executive Director Search Committee.
Thank you, Madam Mayor. The consultant is presently vetting the second round of candidates. We hope to get a report next week. We've got a meeting scheduled on 12-2 to review the second round, and we hope to do interviews on 12-8 and be able to report to the policy board at its December meeting with a recommendation.
Sounds great. Rocking and rolling. Any questions or comments on that? Thank you so much. Move into presentations and updates, starting with item A, an informational update from OPM. Mr. Heft, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're quite welcome. Good to see everybody. I wish it was, in person. Eventually, I think we'll get there. So great to see everyone today. I apologize if you hear some noise in the background. They're actually redoing some light fixtures in our building today. So I've got the door closed. So hopefully, if you do hear some background noise, I apologize. So today I'm going to kind of just go through a brief overview of the American Rescue Plan Act, the state and local fiscal recovery funds, of the information that is available out there. Do know that, obviously OPM, we're trying to keep updated with all the information that we get from U.S. Treasury, making sure to keep in communication with all of our municipalities and boroughs that are receiving funds. Through this, most of it is, obviously all through U.S. Treasury Department, and I'll kind of run through this and then happy to answer any questions as we go through. So the biggest thing is we just did an update on our OPM website under intergovernmental. There is two separate links now to make it easier for everybody. We have a link for the APRA, State Local Fiscal Recovery Program. And then we also have a link for the municipal CRF program, which is the one that's ending December 31st. So you've got both of those on there. Click to the next one. Some of the key things right at the top of the website documents are the compliance and reporting link and the recovery fund program. Both of these links go directly to U.S. Treasury for all the required documents and information that we are pulling ourselves from, but so you have direct links to both of those. And those are the two main important ones, the compliance and reporting, which as you're aware, they've just updated the reporting requirements that they weren't from October 31st that they've got, you know, they've been extended out depending upon whether you're non-entitlement or your entitlement community, that they've changed the reporting dates on that. April, they're going to have, or by April, they'll have updated reporting requirements, guidance, and webinars because they've had some changes in how reporting is going to be done. So we don't even have all of that information as of yet. You can click to the next slide. Thank you. Also, on both this one for ARPA as well as our municipal CRF, every document that's been sent out to the municipalities is posted on our website. So you have it there starting right from, you know, currently the letter that went out in June that basically announced the fund and the allocations that were being done are there all the way down to how to tie in your funds, you know, of all that together with FEMA, FEMA guidance and everything else. So all those documents are on our website and it's updated whenever we send something out. So the next slide, thank you. So the big thing is everyone's always concerned about, well, what are the eligible uses? And it's very important to remember that under the municipal CRF program, there are certain eligible uses. And under the ARPA, there are eligible uses. And that you can't go with, because we was eligible under the last program, it's eligible under this program. You do have to refer to the guidance. There are some what I call cheat sheets that are out there. This is one of them, which is their kind of fact sheet that they have out there, which is just a two-page document. This one shows the main categories of eligible uses. And then it goes into, in the second page that of this document, fantastic. It goes in with actual examples of uses of the funds under each of these. One of the big questions that we always get is kind of like on the water and sewer infrastructure of what are eligible items there. And under the guidance, basic, you know, it does have in there that if they're allowable under the certain programs, that they are eligible under this program. Those are the types of guidance that we can help provide if there are questions. A lot of it is we always tell all of our municipalities and boroughs that you need to check A, with your auditors, B, with your town attorneys to make sure that they review this guidance on here, because it's ultimately up to the municipalities to make sure that they are using the funds correctly. OPM will be working, you know, with all the municipalities, obviously, to, you know, help ensure that that happens, because as the pass-through agency, we have responsibility as well to make sure the municipalities are in compliance for that. So anytime that there is a questions, although we haven't been saying, you know, specifically yes, no to projects, we are able to refer to the guidance that helps you make that decision on there and can provide, you know, any guidance that we can for that. You can go to the next slide. So this is kind of, again, a summary of eligible uses. Basically, it's kind of broken down into four categories. One, to respond to the public health emergency or its negative economic impacts. And then it goes through about, you know, eligible public health uses, disparities, respond to economic harm, and to address any economic outcomes. This is kind of where it falls into as well for lost revenue. And there are provisions for that of having to, you know, match up into these formulas that are in U.S. guidance about, you know, making up for any lost income. So that's the first category. The second is to respond workers performing essential work, which you also had under the first program. Premium pay is a big area here for direct response to workers doing essential work with heightened risk due to in-person interactions. Teleworking is not an eligible activity for premium pay. And premium pay is capped at $13 an hour in addition to the wages and not to exceed the $25,000 per eligible worker. These are just items that are picked right out of the guidance. As number three, I mentioned already, reduction in revenue for public health emergency relative to revenues collected in the most recent full fiscal year. Obviously, there are some categories you've got to fall under there. And then four, make necessary investments, water, sewer, broadband infrastructure. As I mentioned, the cheat sheets, if you will, the fact sheet, the FAQ document, the quick reference guide that are all PDFs available right on U.S. Department of Treasury. And that's that first link on our website. Also has the full interim final rule there, which is important because that's the actual meat and bones, if you will, of the entire act. But those documents are what we always refer back to. Those are the U.S. Treasury guidance documents. So those are important. I keep them, you know, printed out, especially the FAQ gets updated as questions come in, clarification, is something eligible type of thing. Always refer back to those, and those, you know, items we can always help any municipalities, boroughs to, you know, find out where those questions are. Now, the next piece. Also, as you're aware, the American Rescue Plan Act also has another provision with the capital projects. I'm not involved in this piece here, but I can provide you the information because there are ties there, and everyone always asks about how those funds are going to tie in, especially some of the eligible types of projects. We're still working on ways that municipalities can maximize their funds with things the state's going to be doing with the funds. So that way, obviously, everyone will have a chance to be able to get the best out of that. Whoops, there we go. So as most are probably aware, Governor did submit his plan developed in five key areas: defeating COVID, investing in our future, creating a more affordable Connecticut, economic growth, and modernizing state government. This is all on our website. We have a link to it, to the governor's website for ARPA, with all of the documents are there for this. If we can go to the next slide. Also, so you're aware, Special Act 21-1 is some oversight with the legislature of how the plan is going to be implemented and in what projects and purposes get approved. So there's kind of a checks balance system with the executive branch and the legislative branch that goes on with this. The next slide. So these are the documents that are on the website. Has the Connecticut's plan, has the governor's vision, the Rework Connecticut and Education Connecticut with all the different plans to the capital fund outlay. And with that, that's kind of my quick overview of kind of ARPA. Happy to answer any questions that I can, or obviously everyone knows how to get in touch with me as well. So if anyone has questions outside of this, feel free to. Always more than happy to help out however I can, and always great working with all the municipalities and the COG as well.
Martin, thank you so much for that presentation. It's imperative and very important that we all know the limitations around how to spend the funding that we have. Thank you so much.
Definitely, and that's, and it is a hard thing to try to interpret all this. I'm learning every day as well as we go through this with new questions that come up, you know, for what things are eligible. Even now going through, it's like, okay, we've got to look at what parts do we have to audit. You know, even though everyone's going to be reporting to U.S. Treasury, we have requirements because we're a pass-through of things that we have to do. So definitely always learning and growing with everybody, as I say.
Yeah, we're all learning on the fly. Thank you.
Correct, Mayor.
Are there any questions from anyone else? Martin, thank you so much for taking the time today. We really appreciate it.
Not a problem at all. Great to see everybody.
Thanks. Up next, we have infrastructure bill highlights, and we have Chris Giglio. Giglio. Sorry if I butchered that. Correct me. But you're here somewhere because I saw your name.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you, Mayor. It's Chris Giglio.
There you go.
Yes. And I am a New England born and raised Italian. So, just a little bit of background on me. Earlier this year, started working with the COG and your neighbors up in Springfield, Mass, and Franklin County, Mass, on sort of regional efforts and finding federal opportunities to get together on these regional efforts. I like to call myself a federal advocate, but in reality, I am a lobbyist, and that's a dirty word sometimes. But my clients, my firm is called Capital Edge, as you can see there, and my clients are all local governments or local government agencies, so cities, counties, water districts, councils of government, et cetera. We have no private clients. They're all public. And so Lyle and Pauline asked me to talk about the recently enacted infrastructure bill in Congress. So I thought I would go over that. I want to add on Mr. Heft's really thorough report too. There's a couple of American Rescue Plan items with regard to that money that are kind of, you know, swirling around right now. You probably noticed from his presentation that the rules governing those ARP funds are right now in an interim stage. They call it an interim final rule. The Department of Treasury is supposed to finalize that rule sometime, quote unquote, this fall. We're getting close to the end of the fall. So hopefully, you know, around the holidays, we'll see a sort of a final rule, which would allow you to sort of really, you know, sink your teeth into using that money. I think the 150-page interim final rule maybe created more questions than it answered. So hopefully this final rule will do that. The other thing I will mention is that there is legislation pending. The Senate has approved that would sort of loosen the use of some of those funds, those ARP funds. They would allow for about 30% of an entity's funds to be used for pretty much any federally eligible transportation project or community development project, sort of anything that is CDBG eligible. And it would also fiddle a little bit with the formula that you use to determine revenue loss, which is something that some communities have been struggling with too. So there's a chance that that's going to be enacted too, which, you know, sometimes good, sometimes bad, right? You're already ready to spend this money and use it. Sort of throwing those two things in the end might be difficult. But anyway, let me talk about the infrastructure bill. After about 6 years of kind of talking and negotiating and discussing infrastructure in Washington, Congress enacted a bill that we call the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act. It totals about $1.2 trillion for what we are now calling traditional infrastructure, roads, bridges, broadband, things like that. I like to talk about it in the context of what I call new spending in the bill. There's some spending in that bill that would have been, that Congress would have approved even outside of this infrastructure bill. So for instance, there's a 5-year reauthorization of federal transportation programs in that bill. It's about a $400 billion 5-year reauthorization. Congress was likely to do that even outside of this bill. So I like to talk about the $550 billion in sort of new spending above and beyond what Congress is going to spend. With regard to that new spending, the majority of it is going to be either through competitive grants or formulas to the states with some requirements that the states pass it down to local governments. This bill was crafted by a group in July and August, a group of bipartisan senators, about 20 senators, 10 Republicans, 10 Democrats, who put this bill together. And it was approved in August in the Senate in a bipartisan way, 69 votes. So 19 Republicans, 50 Democrats voted for the bill. And then after lots of negotiations over the last couple of months, some of which you may have read about, the House finally passed that bill that the Senate passed in August, last 2 weeks ago, Friday. It was signed into law on Monday. So Laura, if you could do the next one. So this is kind of a breakdown of what the major spending is, again, with regard to the new spending in the bill. And you can see it's pretty heavy on transportation up on the top there, $110 billion for highways and bridges. A lot of that is actually going to be competitive in nature for local governments. The state's going to get its piece and it's going to get its formula, but there will also be some programs that local governments can apply to for bridge repair, for what they call reconnecting communities. It's sort of sort of dealing with infrastructure that has split communities in half or into pieces. Programs for pedestrian safety, things like that. All of that will be competitive in nature. $66 billion for passenger and freight rail. We Lyle and others, we talk a lot about the Springfield Hartford rail project. And we're hopeful that some of that funding can be used for that in there. A lot of that money is going to go directly to Amtrak, but there is also other resources in there, again, sort of competitive grants for passenger rail. A good section of that broadband money is going to go to the states by a formula that's going to weigh heavily on population and sort of unserved and underserved populations. But there should be some in there that'll be competitive, and states will probably be required to pass some of that down. Like I said before, the unserved and underserved areas in a state will be priorities there. The electricity grid money will probably go mostly to those who deal with transmission, but again, there'll be some in there for projects that might, for instance, a project that might underground some lines to keep it from natural disasters, you know, causing wildfires, things like that. Water infrastructure is going to be a big one as well, and a good part of that money is going to go to the state revolving loan funds, their existing programs at EPA. And I say loan, but up to half of that money, I believe it's somewhere close to $30 billion of that $55 billion for water will be used for those state revolving loan funds. Half of that can be used for the EPA can make those either zero interest loans or grants. And again, that is a state program, so there would be some coordination with the state with regard to that. Also, I believe it's $15 billion of that is specifically going to be used for a program to replace lead service lines. That's a high priority for this administration. So cybersecurity as well is going to be mostly a state grant program, but I believe the law says 80% has to be passed down to local governments. The $39 billion for transit, one of the big highlights in that is going to be a really huge increase in the federal program. It's an existing program that it's a competitive grant program for the purchase of electric buses and charging infrastructure that right now is authorized at about $55 million per year. Under this bill, it's going to provide it $1 billion per year over the next 5 years. $25 billion for airports, and I believe there's a $5 billion program for terminal improvements. And then, of course, the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers that does flood control, navigation, that sort of thing. They get $11 billion, a huge increase in their annual budget for construction projects. Next one. So I imagine lots of local government officials will, have seen the signing of this bill and the enactment of this bill. Well, how much do we get here, right? How much does my community get in this bill? And that is hard to say, unfortunately. Again, talking about the new money, because most of that is going to be either through state formula grants or competitive grants, there's really not a lot in there that would say, okay, this is directly goes to local governments. There's one program that's funded at about $550 million. It's a Department of Energy program called the Energy Efficiency and Conservation Block Grant Program. For those of you who may have been around in the 2009-2010 era with the President Obama's Recovery Act, This program has only been funded once before. It was back in 2009, where it got $3.2 billion. But it's all, I like to call this program CDBG for green projects. It provides pretty flexible formula grants to local governments. I believe 35,000 and above is the population threshold, and estates for energy efficiency type projects. So that's going to be a one-time infusion as opposed to 5 years, which a lot of programs in this bill get. When can we get the money, right? Well, you know, it's signed into law. What's going to happen with that? That's also going to depend on the program. There are some programs like that electric bus program that I talked to you before about that already exists and probably is easy for the Department of Transportation to get a notice out onto the street for applying for that. Others are going to be new programs where the agencies are going to have to hopefully quickly develop regulations before they put out notices. So I think that there's going to be a lot of interest in this administration to get as much money out as quickly as possible and get it working. But it's also going to take some time in many ways to jump through all the hoops to actually get it onto the street. I'm guessing there is an existing program that at DOT, it's called the INFRA program. That's an acronym for something, but it's a program that focuses on freight and movement of goods. And with all the sort of very public supply chain issues that are going on, I'm guessing that DOT is working really hard right now, the Department of Transportation, to get that money on the street as quickly as possible. And that is a competitive program. I wouldn't be surprised to see that before Christmas. And then what kind of projects are going to be competitive? If you're going to have to compete for these projects, what kind of projects are going to be competitive? I don't think it's any secret that this administration is really focusing on two things. And one of those is equity. And the other is climate change. And so if there are ways to engage with the administration and competitive grants and INFRA projects in those areas, those are great to kind of put your foot forward on. And because I would expect when we see these program notices come out, those will be listed as priorities in almost every situation. Next slide, thanks. So and you may have also seen there's sort of two parts to this infrastructure story. The president and congressional Democrats would like to add on another infrastructure bill to the one that was just enacted. And the president calls it the Build Back Better plan. In its current form, the way that the House Democrats have recently crafted it, it's about a $1.75 trillion bill that we like to call human infrastructure. And you can see over there on to the right, some of the focuses are childcare, money for universal pre-K, home health aides, affordable housing construction, clean energy tax credits, just to name a few. It's a pretty broad bill. Like I said, sort of human infrastructure, soft infrastructure is kind of what we're talking about. There's also some workforce development funding in there as well. This bill is not going to be bipartisan in nature. It's pretty much decided that Republicans are not going to be voting for this bill. And so in order to get it approved in the Senate, it'll be considered under what they call budget reconciliation rules, which essentially it's a rarely used maneuver. Congress has last used it in 2017 to pass the 2017 tax cuts. It's rarely used, and it basically prevents a filibuster in the Senate. And so ostensibly, if 50 Senate Republicans vote for this bill, Vice President Harris would likely come in and break the tie because the 50 Senate Republicans are expected to vote against it. The House is likely to vote and approve its version of this Build Back Better plan this week. But then I predict and expect several weeks, if not months, of negotiations with the Senate over a final bill. There are not 50 Senate Democrats right now who are prepared to vote for the bill in its current form that the House is going to approve it in. So I could see a lot of back and forth between those two chambers. I think that there is Democratic leaders in the Senate would like to get something done before Christmas, but it's going to depend on probably one or two Senate Democrats who right now are not comfortable with, I think, the size of the bill and what's in the bill. And so there'll be a lot of back and forth with regard to that. And so again, if I had to guess, I would say sometime in 2022, we might see that enacted if they can get all 50 Senate Democrats on board. So I will end there with that, but happy to answer any questions about either of these two bills that you might see kind of floating around. And Mayor and board members, thanks again for your time.
Thanks so much, Chris. Are there any questions for him? There's a lot of information that's coming at us all at once, and all of us want to know, how do we get our hands on the cash?
Yeah.
I've got a ton of infrastructure projects. I could probably spend the whole thing in the city of New Britain, but thank you so much for your time. Really appreciate it.
Thank you.
So we're going to move right along onto action items. Number 7 on our agenda, John Coleman, this is all you.
I have nothing actually to report at this point, Madam Mayor. We're going to get the committee together. We're, as you all know, there's been significant turnover on the policy board, and so we're working on putting together a recommended slate for the officers of and the executive committee, and we'll present it at the December meeting when those decisions need to be made.
Okie dokie. All right, we'll move along to item number 8. It's going back to you anyway.
Thank you. That's fairly straightforward. This is three TIP amendments regarding replacement of a number of highway signs. It does not involve any money that would come to the region or to our local municipalities. It has been approved by the Transportation Committee. They recommend the Policy Board approve it as the MPO, and I would so move.
Do we have a second?
Second, Chris Kervik.
Thank you, Chris. Any discussion? Hearing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carries. And next item.
Again, this is a resolution to endorse the Route 5 corridor study, which has been completed, has been fully endorsed officially by the town of East Windsor, has been approved by the Transportation Committee, who recommends approval by the Policy Board acting as the MPO, and I would again so move.
Do we have a second?
Second. Lori Spielman.
Thank you so much, Lori. Questions, comments?
This is Jason Bowser from East Windsor. I just want to thank CROG for their support in getting that done. That will really create a very positive roadmap for us as we look to reinvent that corridor. And on behalf of my community, I just want to thank this body for their support with that. So thank you very much.
That's nice.
Mr. First Selectman, thank you so much. Good to see you.
You too, Mayor.
All right. Any other questions or comments? All those in favor, say aye.
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 Any opposed? Aye. Motion carries. Thank you. Number 10, legislative update. Ms. Lutz.
There is really very little to report. There are a few, doesn't seem to be any reason behind it, random meetings that are being held in person and on Zoom. Otherwise, it all remains the same. And other than fundraisers, there's very little happening right now, waiting for the short session to start in February.
Great. Thank you so much, Kathy. Are there any questions for her? Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Is there any other business today? I'll entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved, Madam Chair.
For second, Lori Spielman.
There you go. John and Lori got it covered. We are adjourned. The time is 12:41 p.m. Thank you so much.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Thank you.
Thanksgiving.
Thanks, everybody. Thank you, Mayor Stewart, for leading this one.
Hey, no problem. Happy